Welcome to Rebel Health Radio, bringing the best in alternative and integrative medicine to your ears. Hi everyone, Patricia Warby, Alchemy Therapies here, and another in my ongoing series of book reviews. And today what I'm talking about is the book The Orchid and the Dandelion Child. It doesn't say child, but it is about children specifically and why some people struggle and how all can thrive. So it starts with early development and what happens to children. And what they observed was that there were 20% roughly of children who took up the majority of doctors' time, who had more childhood illnesses, accidents, and sort of negative experiences. And indeed, his own sister was this kind of child. And despite the fact that they grew up in the same environment, had a very different experience of childhood and adulthood. And she actually died relatively young. And I guess that's what spurred the author, W. Thomas Boyce, MD, to write the book, because obviously losing your sister and watching her life kind of spiral downhill, she became schizophrenic in her late teens, and despite having her own child and lovingly raising that daughter, just couldn't really function well in the world, and I think died in her early 50s. So it's obviously a personal endeavor for the author to discover why some children growing up in the same environment have a very different experience of ongoing adult life. Now, of course, I've talked about adverse childhood experience before in many other conversations that I've recorded. And so perhaps it won't be news to those of you listening that early childhood experience, particularly before the ages of 7, and including the womb experience and birth, does actually predict to a large extent your experience of adult life. In terms of your job choice, your difficulties or otherwise with relationships, even your income. So it's not just a sort of predictor of health and well-being, but also a predictor of your life experience in general. But what this book develops is an interesting idea that it isn't just a straight linear graph of, you know, the more stress you have, the more adversity in adult life, which is kind of what I believed, because we're looking at populations, of course, with the adverse childhood experience study. And so that does appear to be the case. But when you drill down to individual children, what you find is that for some children, the relationship between stress and reactivity is just very sharp. You know, if they grow up in a low stress environment, they do really, really well on all measures of behavior, attentiveness, social connection, and so on. But if they grow up in a high stress environment, their reactions and negative effects are huge compared to the 80% of children that have a much less steep reaction to stress. And so they'll be moderately affected by a high stress environment, but overall will recover and have a relatively productive and good life. And he wondered why that was. And he obviously thought maybe his sister was the sensitive child. It's been oversimplified as sensitivity. So it's just a simple idea that the more sensitive you are, the less resilient you are to life stresses, but it actually isn't that straightforward. It's more to do with your stress reactivity, and I think that's a better word, because the stress response is a biological, physiological response of your the parts of your brain that sense stress, the hypothalamus, sending signals down to the pituitary, which then activate your stress hormones in your adrenal glands. And so that HPA axis, as it's called, is a very important physiological component. And high cortisol, which is one of the adrenal hormones, actually has huge biological effects on the rest of the body. For instance, it suppresses immunity. I've talked about that before. It changes your blood sugar. Your blood sugar tends to be much more up and down and reactive. You're more inflammatory, so you produce a lot more inflammatory cytokines. These are small protein molecules that float around in your blood and create these kind of responses of higher dental caries. Who knew? You know, I struggled with that the whole of my childhood, you know, always having a filling whenever I went to the dentist for reasons completely unclear. I mean, I was told, you know, avoid sugar, brush your teeth. And to a large extent, I always followed that recommendation, but it never shifted. I always had to have a large amount of fillings in my mouth because I had a lot of dental decay. And cortisol actually destroys those tissues. Teeth are living tissues. And if you're in a stressful environment, you're going to get much more dental decay. So that's unusual. It's not particularly well known. And the other thing that really came to me from this book was hormonal irregularities. So for girls, particularly early menses or periods, and painful as well, what we call dysmenorrhea, and for boys, early puberty. And so, you know, it affects your development as well as your mental and physical health. And so I found that awareness very, very interesting because I'd never seen that linked before to adverse childhood experience. I've done a lot of work on ACEs, but this individual variation to reactivity within the body was something that it really highlighted for me. And it's beautifully written, I have to say. He's a wonderful writer. It's not your typical science book. It's actually a story of him and his sister and the kinds of experiments he's done with children over 25 years throughout his career to find the kind of interactions, these what we now know to be epigenetic variations. So epigenetics describes the interaction of environment and genes. And genes don't just sort of float around. They are actually wrapped in a protein matrix called a histo complex. And the histones, which are little proteins that kind of wrap around the DNA in your cell, actually have to be sort of taken away from the DNA and sort of unwound in order to expose specific sequences of DNA, which is your genetic code. And how that's done is through an interaction with certain groups that stick out from the DNA and acetyl and methyl groups. But you don't need to know all that. But he just goes into a lot of detail with how that changes the cellular function of that individual. And so what's also important to know is that that can in itself, that reactivity, that epigenetic variation can be transmitted down the generations. So if your parent or grandparent had a stressful life or a difficulty, it's much more likely that certain genes will be unwound more easily and be expressed more easily. So for instance, genes that control how long stress hormones live in your body and how well they are kind of broken down and eliminated is actually affected. And so stress lasts a lot longer and is a lot more intense for children with that epigenetic variation. And guess what? I have that as well. So he goes into a lot of detail about the physiology, which is really, really interesting. But he likes to talk also about a more biopsychosocial approach, although I don't think he uses that term in the book, but the importance of social support for ORCID children, for the sort of social arena that they grow up in, the inequalities that may be present in their environment, have a much greater effect on these children with high stress reactivity. And he, towards the end of the book, talks about certain things that he's learned over the years that are really important specifically for these ORCID children. And if you're a parent or you're a teacher or you work with children generally, I'm sure you can instantly identify the children that are especially sensitive to their environment and to the world around them. And he says that the there are sort of six key areas. And the first one is novelty and routine. So children with high stress reactivity find it very hard to cope with change, a change in routine or a change in environment. And that's certainly very true for me. Moving is unbelievably stressful for me. I've only done it like four or five times in my life, but having to change where I live or changing relationship, but even simple things like a change in diet or new supplements or a change in environment in terms of heat or cold, I find it very difficult to adjust between those two things. And so keeping some sort of routine in life and keeping something stable and steady enables the orchid child and the orchid adult to go out into the world and experience novelty safely. The second one he talks about was attentiveness to your orchid child. So understanding that orchid children need a lot more interaction, a lot more support, and a lot more conscious awareness of attunement to that child, perhaps even more than your other children. If you work or have a family with multiple children and you know you've got a specially sensitive child, you actually do have to pay more attention to that child in order to allow them to express themselves and their creativity, which is very highly developed when it's supported. So sensitivity is not necessarily a bad thing. In the right environment, it can be extremely productive. And a lot of the creative people in life, the most creative people, are sensitive children. So it's all about paying attention to that child's needs and supporting them in the best way possible. And certainly in my life, I can remember one nursery school teacher before I went to school, and I was already reading and writing before I went to school at four and a half, I think I was. And she paid special attention to me. She really brought me on. She really encouraged me. And I'll never forget that, because it's what my neurological nervous system needs in order to function well. The third thing he thought was the responsiveness to difference. So that sort of ties in with the second one. So being aware that orchid children are different, they're not going to require the same kinds of inputs as the average child. They need a much more heightened responsiveness to their mood and to creating the environment that they feel safe in. And then acceptance and affirmation of the creative self. So that's encouraging their passions and their projects. Just seeing the fact that they are working on their own agenda, their own ideas, and that is really key to who they are. And the final one was the potency of play. So it sort of ties in with creativity, because play is the child's version of creativity. It's where they experiment with ideas and feelings and relationships. Even if you watch children at play, they're trying out different ways of being in the world to see what works. And so understanding to protect that environment, to allow the creative self to develop, is so key with these kinds of children. And if for whatever reason that doesn't happen, all is not lost, because many things can be done in adulthood to regain that sense of safety and ability to be creative. But it's so much easier if you do it when the child is still open and developing. I think the saddest thing about the book is really how his sister didn't get that from well-meaning parents who managed to raise two other children really well. And so the author isn't blaming his parents in any sense, but he's just saying that they didn't give her what she absolutely needed. And so her sort of descent into mental illness and eventually an early death seemed unstoppable. And I guess that's the message for all of us, really, is what can we do now in this time to make the most of our gifts as individuals and also for our children and those we love, and to kind of acknowledge that we are all different And it's not necessarily a terrible thing to be a sensitive person. So if any of you listening out there recognize that you might be especially sensitive, I'd recommend you try the HSP quiz. If you look it up, Elaine Aron's work talked a lot about highly sensitive people, and see, does that fit you? Because once you understand that's the way you are, and that it's not just a mental concept, you know, that you take things more personally than other people, but that your stress reactivity is different, then you can actually mitigate and do things that help improve your ability to function in the world. And certainly since knowing this information and since developing this idea, I've noticed that a lot of people who are drawn to caring professions, therapists like myself, tend to be highly sensitive, and we really have to look after ourselves while we're working on that level, because otherwise the tendency is we'll overgive to our own detriment. But there are many things you can do to enhance your well-being and kind of paying attention to how you feel at any given moment, and learning to protect your time and your well-being is absolutely vital. So it's a fabulous book. It's a recent book, actually. I'm just trying to see when it was published, but it's quite an interesting new development on the adverse childhood experience study. So 2019, so it's quite recent, but well worth reading if you happen to be involved in anything that is involved in development or bringing people into health and wellness. So that's my review. I'd highly recommend the book. Do let me know your thoughts, and take care, people. Contact me as ever, alchemytherapies.co.uk or patriciawarby.com. See you soon. Bye for now.
Hey, hope you enjoyed listening to Rebel Health Radio. Do subscribe and look forward to catching you soon.